We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The Chicago Bears select.
Welcome to Picks for Polls, presented by The Bear Report. Your number one source for everything Chicago Bears draft news, analysis, scouting reports, and more. Presented by Blue Wire Pods. And now, making their way to the podium, Andrew Freeman and Usaid Koshal.
Welcome to Picks for Polls, a Chicago Bears draft podcast presented by The Bear Report and Blue Wire Pods. My name is Andrew Freeman, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Usaid Koshal. We're recording here on Tuesday, March 12th, at the very beginning of free agency, Usaid. It's been a wild couple of days here as there have been a ton of signings around the NFL. Not so, not so active or exciting for the Bears so far, but we can get into that real quick today. But before we get started, how are we doing today, man?
Yeah, man, I'm doing real well. You're right. It's kind of been a slow first 2 days in free agency. You know, sitting here recording this on a Tuesday night, I think that a lot of the expectations that people have and that people had going into this thing, the Bears haven't lived up to. But then you ultimately look at it, and in terms of the signings, in terms of the players that they've brought in, some of the guys that they've retained, you know, team-friendly deals, Ryan Poles has at least checked off a lot of boxes on, I think, at least for you and I, our offseason wish list.
Yeah, he's definitely played the slow and patient approach to free agency so far. We don't have to get into a ton of it because, I mean, there's not a lot to talk about. But, I mean, extending Jalen Johnson to a long-term deal, getting that done over the last week, that was a very huge deal, obviously, to get him locked in for the long term. And then, you know, making some other smaller signings like Kevin Byard before free agency kicked off. And then, you know, getting DeAndre Swift at the very start of free agency. It was funny, you know, because he had that Adam Schefter tweet literally at the very beginning of when free agency opened, that the Bears are circling in on DeAndre Swift as a priority. And then 20 minutes later, oh, there it is. DeAndre Swift signed by the Bears to a 3-year deal. It's pretty funny how these, you know, legal tampering windows seem to work out, where you get signings going on that quick, where they've only legally been able to tamper with them for like 20 minutes, and they're getting signed to these very intricate deals, which, who knows? I'm not saying there's tampering going on before the legal tampering window, but it is, I mean, just saying. But yeah, after that, like, very quiet for the Bears. Like, they've only made a couple of other signings so far. You get Gerald Everett today, tight end on a 2-year deal. Jonathan Owens on a 2-year deal to be kind of a backup safety. It's not a lot going on so far for the Bears. You know, maybe that's for the best long term, but I think a very different offseason, like you said, than what many Bears fans were expecting.
Yeah, and it's been different simply because, and I should mention, you know, I've kind of alluded to this so many times. And by the way, this is also our 200th episode. So I just want to say, you know, thank you to all the listeners, everyone that's kind of supported us since we've been doing this over the last, basically, I think this is our fourth NFL draft together. Thank you to all you guys. This would not be possible without you. But anyways, here's the deal. Getting back into this whole thing, you look at where Ryan Poles and the Bears were at this offseason, and again, you kind of got the feeling that last offseason was the offseason where they needed to go ahead and sign a whole bunch of guys, you know, retain a lot of free agents. Going back to last year, I mean, the first day that the tampering window opened, within minutes, the Bears had signed TJ Edwards. And then around 3 to 4 o'clock, news broke that they had signed Tremaine Edmonds and Nate Davis, making basically three big splash signings. This year, it's different because you've spent 2 years overhauling the roster with drafted talent. You have also gone ahead and acquired some veterans via trade, like a Montez Sweat. A lot of the pieces are already in place. And so for all the hype that there was about, well, what are the Bears going to do with that second edge rusher position? Do they go after a guy like Danielle Hunter? To me, that was all a pipe dream. Ryan Poles is looking at this and saying, hey, listen, I know I need another center. I know I need another wide receiver. There's holes on this roster that have to be filled. But it's also key to keep in mind that the Bears were at the Oregon and the Oregon State Pro Day over the last couple days. And so it's not hard to see why they'd be targeting a guy like center Jackson Powers Johnson in the first round, especially after you trade down from 9, or why they'd be waiting for one of these veterans like a Tyler Boyd or a Curtis Samuel to basically have a much lower price tag than originally anticipated.
Yeah, there are definitely still a lot of options out there, and the Bears still have a ton of cap room to play with. So it's not as if, like, for Bears fans that are getting impatient out there, I'm certainly getting impatient, I guess, with some of the lack of moves that we've seen. I did expect there to be a little bit more activity, I'll be honest, given everything that's going down. But yeah, I understand staying out of some of the bigger market deals, like Danielle Hunter getting basically 2 years guaranteed at $25 million per year, the Christian Wilkins signing. Like, the Bears were never, I feel like Ryan Poles was never going to get into that type of market. But, you know, I was expecting to see more mid-level deals, like Lloyd Cushenberry, you know, missing out on him to the Titans. You know, I expected the Bears to be in on that market, and he signed for what I felt was a very reasonable price. And I wasn't expecting them to certainly get into the running back market either. So, there always is something that Ryan Poles has done in each free agency cycle that has surprised me. I feel like I've been, like, on top of, you know, his thinking for some of the moves that he's made. You know, Gerald Everett signing is one where I feel like, you know, that was pretty – we probably felt that was going to be coming at some point given his connection to Shane Waldron from their days in L.A. and Seattle. But we'll see how it all plays out. You know, I don't want to judge. We're 2 days into free agency, so I don't want to judge the entire picture of this too much off of 2 days. You know, this might be a thing where we get the long, slow approach to this, and we end up looking at this thing in a week or two with more information and feeling much better about where the Bears are at roster-wise. But there are still a lot of holes. I would like to see an edge, you know, signed. I think another defensive tackle maybe. Would be nice to have another pass rusher in the interior, or even just a run defender type of guy would be a nice, you know, wide receiver is a huge need right now. They need to get a wide receiver in there as well, at least one before we get to the draft. And really, just so you have your options, you know, kind of you have your needs filled going into the draft, and that kind of, you know, lays it out to where you're not forcing picks in the draft, to where I feel like at times they have been forced to make some picks in the draft because they haven't addressed certain positions in free agency. I think the Velus Jones pick is a good example of that. Trading a second-round pick for Chase Claypool is an example of that. Needing to pay a second-round pick for Montez Sweat last year, even though it worked out for them, at least so far. Like, that's what the moves you type kind of have to make when you're not addressing these things in free agency. We'll see how it all works out for, you know, the Bears here. Certainly, I think in a week or so, we can talk more in depth about the moves and give our overall take on how the Bears have done in the first part of the offseason. But, you know, moving on to the main topic of today, we're going to be starting our position previews for the upcoming 2024 NFL draft. And this is going to be an exciting one because we're talking all about the quarterbacks today, which is a hot topic in Chicago, even still with, you know, the lack of a market that there is for Justin Fields. A lot of Bears fans out there are still speculating on, you know, if that deal is going to get done, when's it going to get done? What are the Bears going to do at number one? Like, my thinking has not changed on that. But we don't have to talk about that today, because today we're just focusing on evaluating the quarterbacks. You know, what do we like about these guys? Who are some of the prospects that are highest on our boards right now? Where would we take them if we were running an NFL team? I'm really looking forward to this, you said. And to me, when I'm looking at these quarterbacks here for this upcoming year's draft, it's a very strong quarterback draft, in my opinion. You know, I feel like there is a definitive top six guys that we're talking about here who have first round consideration. Now, I don't think that there's going to be six guys going in the first round. I think it's more likely that you get four, maybe five guys, and a couple guys slip into round two that get selected. But my initial impressions on this quarterback draft is that it is very strong. You had the big names at the top. You got some intriguing guys that could slip into the first round. And then there is a couple of depth options too, where you feel like you might be able to get, you know, a quality backup fringe starter or two later on in the draft.
Yeah, you're right. And it's a very intriguing draft class, top to bottom, because what you essentially have is this. You have the darling that everybody's kind of wanted and been mocking to the Bears since, I want to say, February. And, you know, for a lot of the same reasons, in the sense that the Justin Fields experiment has kind of run its course in Chicago and he's not going to be here and all of that, which, again, we'll address it whenever we get a chance to. But everyone knows Caleb Williams is kind of number one. For the last basically 2 years, he's been the first overall pick in the draft in terms of he's been mocked being the guy that's the one overall. And then you have the second guy in Drake May. And to me, really, the draft starts after Caleb Williams and Drake May. And why? Because you look at the rest of this class and, you know, with pro days happening now, the combine behind us, I mean, there's an argument to be made that between Jaden Daniels, Bo Nix, J.J. McCarthy, and Michael Penix, that any of those guys could be QB3 onwards. Now, the most common QB3 tends to be Jaden Daniels. And then you have J.J. McCarthy, who's been mocked as the guy going in the first round, kind of the fourth of the top four quarterbacks selected. And then it's a total toss-up between Bo Nix and Michael Penix. So it's just really kind of intriguing draft class top to bottom, where the reality, I think, is that we still have so much to go. And when you look at Daniels, Nix, Penix, and McCarthy out of those four, I mean, people are going to have them ranked pretty much all over the place.
Yeah, well, let's just get started with, you know, that top six that we talked about, that you talked about there, because like you said, like, I think evaluations for these guys are going to be all over the place depending on who you talk to and the type of system that you're looking to run. And, you know, I'm certain a lot of NFL teams have different evaluations on these guys. Now, we've heard a variety of different rumors, like Caleb Williams seems like to be the consensus number one, but even like there are a lot of evaluators that it seems are down on Drake May even as the number two quarterback, to where they're not even sure about that. Now, I'm going to get into that later in the podcast because I think that's ridiculous, but let's start at the bottom of that list. And what we can do is we can like divide these guys up into tiers. All right. So of that top six, who is in that lowest tier for you for quarterback prospects?
Yeah. I mean, for me, the guy that's in the lowest tier is, or the two guys that are in the lowest tier, I should say, just to kill two birds with one stone here, it is Bo Nix along with Michael Penix. And again, both of these guys are kind of polarizing prospects in a sense. And if you remember Bo Nix coming out of, or well, he's at Oregon right now, but when he was in Auburn, he was always kind of labeled as this high upside, high floor type of guy. But then again, you know, never really reached expectations at Auburn, transfers to Oregon, all of a sudden has a massive career year, you know, as a guy being basically what was a fifth year senior. And then now people begin to wonder, well, what can he really do? And I feel like with Michael Penix too, even though he had the championship run this past season with guys like Rome Odunze and Jalen Polk, that it still was not, you know, enough for anyone to kind of fully be sold on him. Now, both of those guys are in the lowest tiers for me for one reason and one reason only, because I think ultimately when you look at where they're at, what they're doing, kind of how their college careers have progressed, you do basically come to a consensus watching their film where you go ahead and you say, guys that have all the tools, they've got NFL caliber traits. They've got the athleticism. They have the arm. They have pretty much everything needed to be an NFL quarterback. But what they don't necessarily have is the traits that put you over the top, right? They don't have the traits where it's like gunslinger mentality. They don't have the traits where, you know, you can go ahead and you can kind of confidently say, okay, this is a guy who plays with tons of poise, is clutch in tight moments, and a guy who just week to week is consistent enough to the point where your team is winning because of him. I think when you look at Knicks and Phoenix, I mean, they are in a sense inconsistent in a manner where the pieces to the puzzle are in front of them, but teams are going to be scared because they don't want to take that big of a gamble on them.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you on those two being in kind of the lowest tier of the top six, and I have them as definitively both of them as second-round prospects. I probably wouldn't draft them in the first round. Now, of the two that, you know, if you were to ask me who would I, if I were looking to maybe trade up into the back end of the first round just to get that fifth-year option on one of these guys, I'd probably take a chance on Bo Nix over Michael Penix. It's very close, though. And, you know, I'll say this first. I'll break down both prospects, what I like about them and what I don't like. Start with Michael Penix. You know, the thing that really stands out for him is the arm and the velocity he's able to put on those throws, especially on those intermediate passes. He does a really nice job. He's probably the best in terms of like pure accuracy to the sidelines. He's probably the best deep ball passer on go balls and, you know, just throwing it over the shoulder for his wide receivers to go grab and tight window opportunities. He's probably the best quarterback in this draft at that. He's got a very quick release when he has to get the ball out. And that's one of the reasons why he has such a very low pressure to sack conversion rate, only 7.6%. That's the lowest in this draft by far for these quarterbacks. So he doesn't take a lot of sacks. He gets the ball out of his hands very quickly when he needs to. You know, he's got a really good arm where he can really amp up the velocity. We saw that in games such as, you know, in the college football playoff against Texas. He was making throws in that game that just gets your mouth salivating with what he could do at the next level. He's got a lot of comparisons to like Phillip Rivers for kind of having a funky release. I don't know if that should be just because he's left-handed and, you know, that's just throwing you off a little bit aesthetically when you're watching him play. But his arm is pretty wicked. He makes some pretty insane throws and really put it all together over the last 2 years at Washington, where he is playing with better weapons in a very good system at Washington. And he's been able to showcase his talents. Now, with that said, the reason why I'm a little bit lower on him compared to, you know, some of the other guys in this draft is, you know, first of all, the injury history. I know he's been cleared medically at the combine, but the injury history still concerns me. You know, 4 season-ending injuries in his college career. I mean, look, that's just very concerning for me. And what really concerns me about him transitioning to the next level is that, you know, he struggles to move, and that is, you know, the aspect to me. To where I'm not sure if it's going to translate well to the next level because he doesn't really move well in the pocket. He doesn't really have the ability to extend plays, and his accuracy really falls off when he has to throw on the run and he has to, you know, you know, work off schedule and he's off balance and he has to make these throws, it's just not the same as he is with a clean pocket where he's throwing from a, you know, concise platform and is able to put a little bit more into his throws. It falls off for me. In the NFL, he's going to have to be moved off his spot a little bit more and have to make some throws where he's got guys in his face, you know, guys at his feet where he's going to have to move his feet, reset in the pocket. You know, he's flashed some of that. Like, again, the Texas game, he showed those ability to do those things, but that was an aberration on his film to me. To me, you saw a lot more where if there's a guy in his face, he's just chucking it out there and hoping for the best that his receiver, you know, is in the right spot to get the ball. And usually it worked out for him because he played with insane wide receiver talent. And that's the other thing that kind of, you know, look, Robo Dunze, Jalen Polk, you know, some of the other guys on that Washington offense, you know, like I think you have Fontenot on the offensive line, obviously at left tackle, a lot of talent on that Washington offense. A lot of guys are going to be drafted high and are going to have successful careers in the NFL. And, you know, that kind of can overshadow some of the other flaws in his game, I think, to where, yeah, I mean, again, like I said, some of the traits are not going to be able to translate to the next level, I don't think. I don't think his arm talent is necessarily going to be able to translate as well when he has to move off his spot more in the NFL. And then there's the other part of this to where, like, he's a six-year starter, you know, super senior type of guy. Didn't really break out until late in his college career. So do we ignore the previous 4 years of his career where, yeah, he showed some flashes, you know, had some injuries, or do we weigh that with, you know, what he was able to showcase the last 2 years? And that's kind of the similar where I get with Bo Nix as well, who Bo Nix, you know, the big difference is that he did not have the injury history that Michael Penix Jr. had, but that only can add even more questions because now you don't really have an excuse for why he did not play as well as he did, you know, his first few years in college when he was at Auburn. And it's really weird to see how his trajectory kind of played out to where at Auburn, he was kind of like this wild man who was always playing off script, you know, having to make plays because that Auburn offense was just a dumpster fire around him. And he had to do so much just trying to improvise and stuff. He goes to Oregon and he becomes a really good, you know, system quarterback to where he executes his first reads very well. He gets the ball out on time, on target. And then when he needs to, you know, occasionally make a playoff script, you know, he does have the ability to do so. You know, for me with Bo Nix, the things that kind of worry me about his long-term prospects, very low average depth per target his last couple of years at Oregon. You know, a lot of his production came off of screens and short passes and quick first read throws that aren't necessarily going to be there at Oregon at the next level, I should say. You know, did a nice job of not taking too many sacks his last couple of years, which is nice. But again, some of that's because he's, you know, getting the ball out so quickly on screens and short throws. He's going to be 24 years old as a rookie when he's coming in. I think he's got average physical tools. I like his prospects to be a solid starter maybe in the NFL. But the big thing I have with those two is that, and I say this for both of them, is that as later breakouts, I just question the upside with those two.
Yeah, I know. Those are two completely valid points because the reality is that so Michael Penix and Bo Nix, to me, they are kind of like Jake Eason coming out. Jake Eason and Sam Ehlinger, I should say, coming out of Washington and Texas a couple of years ago, where everybody kind of looked at them and said, okay, you know, these are guys that could potentially go on despite wherever they are drafted and, you know, have pretty successful careers. But then it was just so hard to ignore the deficiencies in their game in terms of the inability to put together, you know, 3 to 4 strong college seasons, the inability to go ahead and, you know, just clean their own game up and just be relatively consistent, I should say. So it's kind of that big situation where you look at these two and you kind of go ahead and say, if you go ahead and draft them, you're basically taking this massive gamble and you better have a really good veteran in front of them to allow both of them to, you know, sit and marinate for basically a year, 2 year and a half before going ahead and giving them the keys to the franchise.
Yeah. And for me, like, I do feel confident that like both of these guys can start for you on a rookie contract and play well for you in a rookie contract. The thing is, I don't think with either of them, I'm not projecting them to be that level of quarterback to where I'm paying them, you know, big time money on a long term deal after that rookie contract is over. And that's a big thing that teams have to think about here is, you know, what's their likelihood of being that top 12 quarterback that you're willing to pay the big bucks to? And for me, it's just not there with those two. And so, like, if you're a team that, you know, has a pretty good team, but maybe needs a short term, you know, filler at that quarterback position to win on a rookie contract, and you can load up the rest of the roster around them and try to make a go for it for 4 years. Like, hey, why not in the second round take a flyer on one of these two guys and see if you can make that work? Or even, you know, if you're really desperate, you know, trade up in the first round. Like, I can see a team like Denver, even though they don't have a second round pick, but I can see a team like Denver or the Raiders, you know, trading up into the second round. And or in the first round, late in the first round, and trying to make that work after they addressed another position in need with their own first round pick, right? But would I be taking them, you know, the top 20 picks, or even, you know, if I had a first round pick, would I take them? No, probably not. But that gets us to our next tier of guys, to, you know, guys that maybe you would consider in the first round, but maybe aren't as, you know, as sure things that you as you'd want. You know, who's in that tier for you? You said.
There's two. Well, I should really say there's one guy in that tier for me, but I will touch on the second guy in just a moment here. So, for me, the guy that, you know, I just wrote a scouting report on JJ McCarthy from Michigan, but he's interesting to me simply because you could consider him to be the biggest unknown out of all these quarterbacks. And what I mean by that is this, is that if you start looking at the type of player he is, you look at his background, he's obviously been a winner. Is a native of LaGrange Park in Illinois, went ahead and then kind of figured out, you know, who he was as a player when he was at Michigan, won a state championship in high school, just won the national championship too. But JJ McCarthy to me is interesting because everyone's going to sit there and talk about, well, he likes to play with a chip on his shoulder, which he certainly has. He's a really good athlete. He has all the intangibles needed to go ahead and be a highly successful quarterback. He navigates the pocket really well. And there's a lot of really good things about him too. He has some scrambling ability, but again, it's not the greatest scrambling ability on the planet. But where I get lost, quite frankly, in the JJ McCarthy shuffle and all the talk about him is just who he is as a player. And what I mean by that is this, is that you're getting a guy who does not have the biggest arm. You are getting a guy who, quite frankly, is not as athletic as maybe a Jaden Daniels, Drake May, or Caleb Williams, and really a guy who wins with his intangibles, like his poise, his calmness, ability to navigate the pocket, a guy who really wins more with instincts rather than being the type of player who just wins solely on physical traits. So again, JJ McCarthy to me is a student of the game. He's still growing. He's still got a way to go as a passer as well. And that's just because, again, it was something that was out of his control. But when you have Donovan Edwards and Blake Corum in your backfield in Michigan, I mean, there's no way that you're going to be throwing the ball like 30 to 35 times a game simply because you don't need to. And so it's really fair to wonder, did the pro-style offense that he played in at Michigan, did that really hinder his ability to fully showcase what he was able to do? So again, there's just so many unknowns there.
Yeah, JJ McCarthy is the toughest evaluation for me in this entire quarterback class because, like, there just isn't a lot of body of work to go off of here with him. I think, you know, looking at his profile, you know, if I got this right, he's only got like 700 something dropbacks for his entire career or something like that. Like, it's a ridiculously low number for him. He just hasn't had a lot of chances to really go out there. And that's with, you know, 2 years of starting experience. So it's not that this guy isn't experienced. I mean, he's a young player, but it's just that there's not a lot of reps there for him throwing the ball because he didn't really need to at Michigan. You know, they had the best offensive line in the entire country. They had a great run game. You know, Harbaugh loves to, you do go old school ground and pound anyway. And that's kind of the identity of his offenses wherever he goes, especially in college. And that's what they did. They ran the ball a lot. You know, he wasn't really asked to do a lot you know, whether it was just, you know, off of play action, really, and quick game. It's really all he was asked to do, you know, quick game stuff, you know, in the shotgun, and then play action where he's, you know, throwing deep crossers over the middle of the field. That's really it. He would have the occasional splash play on third down where he had to go out there and make a play. Sometimes they get him involved in the quarterback run game, but he really wasn't being asked to do a lot, you know, especially compared to, as we get to some of these other guys at the top of this draft who were asked to do a lot of the heavy lifting for their offenses and did not have as easy of a situation as McCarthy did. Now, McCarthy, he does have the ability to make plays. Like, he's got a lot of physical tools, I think. He's a good athlete. He's got a pretty good arm. You know, he throws the ball with very good velocity over the middle of the field. I do question, you know, his deep ball accuracy is not the best, and he just hasn't thrown a ton of deep balls, I think, in his time at Michigan. Again, a lot of it was, you know, short to intermediate for him with what he was asked to do. But I can definitely see the upside there. Again, he's only 21 years old. He doesn't have a ton of experience. He's, to me, a guy, though, that you don't really want to throw out there right away, right? He's a guy that you want to draft him, let him sit for a year, develop around behind a veteran quarterback, and let him iron out some of the other areas in this game. Because the things that kind of worry me about him translating to the next level is that, you know, I'm not sure arm talent wise if he has the ability, because he hasn't really shown as much, to throw different types of throws. Like, can he throw, you know, touch passes down the sideline? Can he layer balls, you know, over defenders in the middle of the field? You know, can he throw a touch deep down the field where he can put some air on the ball to allow his receiver to get under it, right? You know, those are some of the throws where I'm questioning whether he has that in his bag, because he hasn't really put that on film as much. He's very much a one speed thrower where he's throwing with a lot of velocity. And it's great when you have to fit balls in tight windows over the middle of the field. And I think a lot of teams that run that play action style, you know, Shanahan style of offense, where they are going to be doing a lot of those throws over the middle of the field on in breakers and slants and play action concepts and all that stuff, they're going to really like this kid because he can do all that stuff at a very high level. But some of the other parts of playing the position, you know, he's a little bit raw at this point in his career. But, you know, with that said, I do see the appeal for some, if you're looking to be, you know, getting a starting caliber guy who might have a little bit more upside. He has answered some questions about his weight. He measured it at 219 pounds at the combine, which was a concern for me because he is a kind of a slider looking guy when I watched him on film, but he was able to check off that box. Size doesn't seem to be an issue for him whatsoever, it seems like. So it really comes down to, are you comfortable with the experience level that he has or lack thereof? Can you think you can develop some of the other aspects of his game? And, you know, where are you drafting that player? To me, like, I don't know. It's I would not touch him with a top 20 pick, probably. I'd probably take him as a late first rounder and, you know, see if I can develop him over the course of that, you know, rookie deal. And then if he breaks out and becomes a guy I'm willing to pay down the line, like, sure, why not? But I'm not sure if I see that level of upside with him. But it's interesting to kind of compare him with another guy that I have in a similar tier, but I'm curious to see where you're at with him. And that's Jaden Daniels, who has gotten a ton of love as a top quarterback. When a lot of people have been talking about this quarterback class, they've been kind of describing it as like a big three with Daniels, Caleb Williams, and Drake May. And I don't know. I'll let you touch on him first, because I wholeheartedly disagree with that. I think there are a lot of red flags when I watch Jaden Daniels and I look at his profile. But where are you at with him?
You know, I'm really split on Jaden Daniels. And again, I do, at least on paper, you do kind of see and understand why people are saying it's Caleb Williams, then Drake May, and Jaden Daniels is the sort of big three. But really, Jaden Daniels is this incredibly interesting case study, because again, he's another guy who spent time at Arizona State, never really found his footing, transfers to LSU, and then just absolutely goes off in 2022 and 2023. Sitting here going into the 2024 draft, I think it's very clear that what teams are going to see is basically this hybrid version of a Lamar Jackson slash Justin Fields. And so I look at this thing and I kind of go ahead and say there's a certain reality that exists with all this. Jaden Daniels, again, a guy who has the necessary arm strength, has the necessary athleticism to really be a guy who plays at a high level. But then again, he's a late bloomer. He's a guy who's not going to hit every throw on the field. He's a guy that you look at and you kind of say, okay, yes, he can navigate the pocket, but you would like for his escapability to just be a tad bit better so that he can really prove that, hey, I can get out in space and I can, you know, hit those kind of quick, easy throws. I think in terms of processing power too, he's not 110% where he needs to be. There are instances where it seems like, you know, he locks on to his first and his second read for way too long. Instead, it has to be 1-2-3 or 3-2-1. However, you know, the progressions are set up within the LSU offense. And so it's just, again, a situation where you kind of look at it and you start to go ahead and say, you know, Jaden Daniels is a guy who there's a lot to work with there. But if you had to choose between a player who has a somewhat similar skill set to Jaden Daniels or choose Jaden Daniels, I mean, I would say I definitely would take a guy like Anthony Richardson coming out of college over Jaden Daniels, which, as polarizing as it is, I mean, I wasn't necessarily the highest on Anthony Richardson either, but I just do feel like Richardson's ceiling is a bit higher than Jaden Daniels.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Yeah, Jaden Daniels, for me, he terrifies me when I'm evaluating him because I just, to me, he's a one-year wonder. And what's worrisome about me with that is that, look, he's an experienced guy, you know, 5 years as a starter in college. But you look at all of his seasons leading up to this last year where he won the Heisman, none of his previous four seasons are anywhere remotely close to what he was able to replicate or produce in his last year at LSU, which makes me question, okay, is that Jaden Daniels progressing as a player and getting better? Or, you know, did he play with Malik Nabers and, you know, you know, a lot of these wide receiver talents at LSU with a bunch of clean pockets all day? And was that juicing his, you know, production and making him look a little bit better than what he actually is? And it's tough to kind of find that middle ground. Again, I have him in a similar tier as JJ McCarthy, where I would still take a chance on him in the first round because I do like some of the physical tools. I think he's got the requisite arm talent to play in the at the next level. As an athlete, he's unbelievable. He's a great runner, whether it's as a scrambler or you can get him in the design run game, and he's just very explosive. And you know, he's not going to break a ton of tackles, but he accelerates the top speed very fast, and his top speed is going to be, you know, top five in the NFL among quarterbacks once he enters the league, right? He's right up there, maybe not like prime Lamar Jackson, but he's going to be up there with Lamar Jackson, Justin Fields, Jalen Hurts in terms of the best running quarterbacks that we have in the NFL as soon as he makes it to the next level. So that part of it, you know, is very exciting, I think. And, you know, he's shown some development as a passer to where, you know, there are some things that you can maybe, you know, work with here. Certainly, you know, got a lot better as a deep ball passer, but also some of that is also like he's throwing some Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr. who were like wide ass open all the time on deep routes because nobody in college football can guard those two guys, right? So that also makes things kind of tough for me when I'm evaluating. A couple things that kind of scare me with Jaden Daniels is that, you know, for one, I bring up the 1 year wonder stuff. And just to put this into perspective, like his best year prior, you know, to 2023 was, you know, funny enough, like maybe you could say his 2022 season where, you know, 2,913 yards, 17 touchdowns, three interceptions, a 79.1 passing grade, which is pretty good stuff right there. You know, pretty solid numbers overall, but nothing spectacular. 7.5 yards per attempt. You know, he's been consistently in the, you know, 8 yards per attempt to 7 yards per attempt range for his entire college career. And then his last year at LSU, yards per attempt jumps all the way up to 11.5 yards per attempt. Throws 40 touchdowns after his previous career high was 17 in a season. You know, 3,800 yards passing after his previous career high was 2,943 yards in his freshman year at Arizona State. And then his big time throw rate jumps all the way up to where he's a career 4.5% guy, all the way up to 8.5% his last year, according to PFF. So you just see this massive jump from him in his last year. And that terrifies me. It's different from a guy like, you know, Joe Burrow. And a lot of guys are comparing him to Joe Burrow in terms of the breakout, because both LSU guys both had a ton of talent around them in their breakout years. Here's the thing. Joe Burrow, when he had his big year, that's like the all-time greatest season that we've seen from a college football quarterback, right? You know, Joe Burrow put up all-time numbers, all-time production, and he showcased all-time, you know, well, not all-time traits, but he showcased high-level traits that translate very well to the next level. And that was really Joe Burrow's, like, first or second, you know, year as a full-time starter. It's not like he, you know, was a starter in college football for 4 years and then suddenly figured it out, right? You know, he got some playing experience, and then he broke out his second year as a starter. Jaden Daniels, not necessarily the case. And then I look at some of the deeper stats that really kind of, you know, kind of terrify me. And this is backed up with what I see on film as well. But I question his pocket presence at the next level. I question his ability to, you know, play on time and get through his reads in a quick manner. You know, his pressure to sack rate for his entire college career was 24.5%. That is danger territory. That is like right up there with like Justin Fields, Sam Howell, you know, Will Levis, guys who don't really have great pocket presence and take a ton of sacks at the next level. You know, so that shows when pressure gets in, you know, he's either scrambling or he's taking sacks, right? He's not really escaping very well. He's not making plays with, you know, his arm after scrambling. You know, he's a guy who looks to scramble from clean pockets a lot, which is not going to translate as well to the next level compared to in college. And again, like it just takes a lot of sacks. And the other thing that we talk about here, Jaden Daniels, is that like he is a fearless dude. He's a tough dude. I'll give him that. But he's got a skinnier frame. You know, he's a smaller guy at his size, at, you know, 6'4", but on the slender size with that height. And he takes a ton of huge hits, man. And like they're like laughably, like just laughable, some of the hits that he takes there. Like he does not have that self-preservation that you're looking for a guy who runs as much as he does. He took a ton of huge hits at college where he's just getting blown up by defenders running at full speed. And I worry that he's going to have that with his play style, that he's going to last for a long time at the NFL level. So I don't know. There are some things that really worry me about Jaden Daniels. You know, for someone who's done a lot of work on Jaden Daniels, I would suggest, you know, checking out a Twitter account that does a lot of good stuff in these rookie quarterbacks. Start Kyle Orton is a Twitter name out there. He has a ton of data and spreadsheets where he breaks down a lot of his concerns with Jaden Daniels. He's kind of, you know, opened my eyes to some of the issues that are in his game. And there's a lot more I could go over in terms of Jaden Daniels. I do think there are some exciting things about him. But like I said, there are a ton of concerns there. And for those who are going to be putting him ahead of Drake May or in that Drake May conversation, like this is the ultimate, like late in the game, recency bias. Like we're overthinking things here when it comes to these quarterback prospects. You cannot convince me that Jaden Daniels is on the same tier of a quarterback prospects as Drake May or even Caleb Williams. They're not in the same stratosphere for me. So it annoys me when I hear these conversations about Jaden Daniels possibly being the pick at number two to Washington, because I think that would be a colossal mistake by Washington if they were to do that. We can get into Drake May soon here coming up shortly. But to me, there's a clear divide between where Jaden Daniels is as a prospect and where these next two prospects are that we're going to talk about here. Again, there are some exciting things for Jaden Daniels. I think he's a guy you can have success with on a rookie contract because you can involve him in the quarterback run game. He's got some nice traits throwing the ball to where he's improved as a deep ball passer throughout his career. He takes care of the ball very well. You know, he had a very low turnover-worthy play rate in his career, especially over the last 2 years. So there are some things that you really like about him. But, man, there are some red flags there. And, yeah, it's going to be an interesting valuation for a lot of these NFL teams when it comes to him.
And that is what makes him kind of this incredibly sort of complicated player to evaluate. But, you know, ultimately, when you kind of look at some of the other quarterbacks in this class, you know, to me, it's in a sense a very top-heavy class. And it's top-heavy because what you have is consistently May and Caleb Williams that have kind of been ranked as number one and number two. And again, there was a point this offseason where I was on record saying don't be surprised if you have some teams that may rank Drake ahead of Caleb Williams. And that is simply because I think ultimately when you look at it, every team's going to grade quarterbacks differently based on kind of how they fit into the offense, along with the personnel, the systems that they're coming from in college, a whole bunch of different things. Now, to me, you know, my number one and number two quarterbacks are Caleb Williams and Drake May. And I'll start with Drake. Drake is this prospect who is bigger than Caleb Williams. I believe he's about 6'3", 6'4", whereas Caleb Williams is right around, you know, 6 feet tall, 6'1". But you kind of look at Drake and who he is, there's instances where, you know, when things really break down, he tends to just kind of chuck the ball up and hope that, you know, someone's going to come down with it. He kind of just will go ahead and, you know, lose the pocket presence, the ability to go ahead and navigate the pocket, hit those open receivers. But then there's a lot of really good things he does as well. There's a pretty good amount of mobility that you're going to go ahead and see from him. You really go ahead and see a pretty solid NFL ready arm, a guy who, you know, puts a lot of touch on the ball, a guy who can hit pretty much any throw on the field, a player who, you know, is respected in the locker room and by his teammates. So overall, you know, Drake May is a guy that's been highly productive at North Carolina too, and I would not be surprised if he ends up being a lot of teams QB2 and ends up with the Washington Commanders. And then number one for me is Caleb Williams. Now, there's been a lot of stuff out there about Caleb Williams. We discussed the dad last week and Carl Williams, but you talk about the football player Caleb Williams, and it's kind of what can't he do? There's, you know, instances where people are like, well, you know, he does hold on to the ball too long. He goes ahead and tends to really get kind of erratic with some of the stuff that he does. He kind of plays this backyard football mentality. He's going to be a bust. Is he really the guy that's going to be the changer for this franchise at the next level? And, you know, I think the reality of it is Caleb's proven more than enough in two different programs that he is without a doubt the top dog. You look at his days at Oklahoma and then following Lincoln Riley to USC. Basically, for the last 2.5 years, we've gotten a front row seat to why Caleb Williams is going to be a franchise quarterback at the next level. And so, again, you're getting a guy who processes really well. He could speed the processing up just a bit, but it's pretty solid for the most part. Really good arm, kind of make those, you know, backyard football style throws and really hit any throw on the field. Has some pretty solid chemistry. And you could even argue this, that Caleb did more with less at USC in his final season, especially after the departure of guys like Jordan Addison, than any of the other five quarterbacks in this class that are being projected as first-round picks.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the supporting cast and the process with Caleb Williams, because I think there's a big misconception that USC was like this loaded team this last year that Caleb Williams just didn't play well, and that's why the team, you know, stank. Or, you know, there's this idea that Caleb Williams is just this, you know, one read and just play off script and, you know, play backyard football type of guy who doesn't read defenses. Like, no, not the case at all. Like, does he have to improve on these things? Yes, he does, in order to reach his potential to the next level. And I'll get to Caleb Williams here because I've done scouting reports on both these guys, Caleb Williams and Drake May. The bottom line here is that both of these guys are, you know, the type of quarterback prospects that you're looking for at the top of the draft. I think there is a bit of a gap between the two. I have Caleb Williams as a surefire number one overall pick type of dude. I'm not going to go with the, and here's the thing. Everyone goes with the generational tag, and they use that against Caleb Williams and say, like, well, if he's just generational prospect, like, why isn't he doing this, 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 and this? And like, no, I'm not getting into that. The fact that he's even being considered in that class of quarterback just tells you how talented the dude is. But I think he's a generational player? No, like Andrew Luck to me is like the ultimate quarterback prospect. Like, there isn't going to be a quarterback prospect that's going to measure up to Andrew Luck, in my opinion. Like, he's just on that next tier, that next level of a prospect. So like, no, is Caleb Williams on the same par as Andrew Luck coming out? No. But do I think, you know, there's an argument to be made for him? And when you compare him to like a Trevor Lawrence or a Joe Burrow coming out of college over the last decade, like, yes, I think there is. And for Drake May, he's right below that. And I don't think he's too far off from that tier of prospect. I'll start with Drake May. I did a Sky report on him, and, you know, to get my full kind of thoughts on him, you can go check that out, where I kind of went into a little bit of a deep dive on, you know, his strengths and weaknesses. For Drake May, like you said it, man, he's got the arm talent. He's got the prototypical size. He's a good athlete. You know, he throws laser beams over the middle of the field. And I think that's the thing that kind of sticks out the most for me, is that, you know, Drake May, he's probably the best quarterback in this class at attacking the middle field and utilizing that and making, you know, tight window throws in that area, which is something you're going to have to do at the next level. Like, I don't care who you are. You know, the best quarterbacks are able to attack the middle of the field, because that is the most efficient spot. And that is, you know, a spot where you can, you know, get into trouble throwing interceptions and stuff if you're not seeing it well. But there is a ton of rewards to being able to attack that area of the field. And Drake May, to me, he sees it better, he attacks it better, and he throws the ball there with the best accuracy and velocity needed to make those type of tight window throws to that area of the field better than anybody in this draft class. That's what really stands out to me when it comes to Drake May. You know, and as far as like some of the other strengths of this game, like as a deep ball passer, I mean, whoo boy, like we talk about like Justin Fields and his ability as a deep ball thrower. Drake May is like on that level, if not like maybe slightly better than Justin Fields coming out of college at Ohio State. Drake May is an extremely accurate deep ball thrower, whether it's over the middle of the field, on the sidelines, whether he has to throw it with some touch, or even, you know, add some velocity on these throws to get the ball in the tight windows there. Like, this dude is just automatic on some of those deep balls that he has to throw down the field. It's a treat to watch. And, you know, when you compare him to a guy like Justin Fields, like the difference between the two is that, yes, they're both very aggressive quarterbacks that like to push the ball down the field, like to throw the ball deep, and are very good at it. But what separates maybe a Drake May from a Fields is that he gets the ball out on time much quicker than a guy that Justin Fields does. Who does hang on to first reads quickly. I'm comparing Justin Fields here because, let's be honest, like, if the Bears are drafting Drake May, it's because they are looking to move on from Justin Fields, and that's realistically going to be, you know, the case here. It's coming up in the next, I don't know, month or so. But whereas you oppose that to, like, Drake May, you know, he doesn't hold on to the ball all that long. I think he had a career, like, 2.8 time to throw in college, which is not long whatsoever for a guy who attacks attacks deep as much as he does. So he does have an understanding of how to play within time and structure within the course of an offense, but also has some ability to make plays and go off script when the situation allows for it. And he's an off script playmaker a lot more than one might expect for him based off of what his profile maybe suggests. But he does kind of have that, you know, Josh Allen, you know, let me just go out there and make a play mentality to him, where he's just going to say, screw it. We're just going to go out there. I'm going to run for 10 yards. I'm going to run through a linebacker's chest. I'm not going to care. I'm going to get this first down, or, you know, the play's not working here, I'm going to extend it, and then I'm going to look for a guy down the field and see if there's anybody open there. There is an element to his game. You know, he'll flip with his left hand on some of these throws that we've seen from this past year. You know, he'll be in the grasp of a tackler, and he'll just chuck it to a guy who's next to him. Like, he does have that ability to improvise and make things happen. The thing that kind of, like, worries me about Drake May to the next level is that, like, his pocket presence and his natural accuracy. Well, not his natural accuracy, but his footwork and what that kind of does to him is not the best right now. He's got a way to go mechanically, I think, to where he's going to have to clean some things up. That might take a year or two for him. Really, you know, that can affect his accuracy. His accuracy to some areas of the field is not great because of his footwork. You know, he has a bad tendency of moving himself into pressure within the pocket, not always sliding to the open space to find, you know, that spot in the pocket to where he's comfortable. He'll drop his eyes and start to look to run and find escape lanes instead of, you know, when he's in a clean pocket of staying in the open spot and continuing to scan down the field. So his processing, his pocket presence, his pocket management is not perfect right now. I think those are things that can get better with time, though. He's a young guy still. He's got all the tools. He seems like a smart kid. I think he's as good of a prospect. Like, in most years, he's the surefire number one overall pick, I think. Now, you compare that with Caleb Williams, who doesn't have the traditional size that you maybe look for in these quarterbacks. He's slightly undersized at like 6'1", 215 pounds. But, man, like, the arm talent this dude has is – like, I have not seen anything like this for a guy coming out of college, really. He's got ridiculous arm talent. The way he can make throws at any arm angle, any arm slot, whether he's under pressure, getting hit, doesn't matter. Like, he can make any type of throw to any part of the field at any time, and he does it with good accuracy for the most part as well. There just isn't a lot. Like, he opens up the entire playbook because he can do everything. He can throw the Justin Herbert style deep shots down the field where he's throwing like 65 yard bombs, you know, with loft and touch to his guys down the field. He can throw a velocity over the middle of the field. He can make those wonky sidearm throws. You know, he can make throws as he's getting hit. You know, he can do creative things with his arm to find open windows, to find guys. Like, every throw is in his bag. And it's very rare for a quarterback prospect to have that level of tools to his game. We talk about the off-script playmaking. Like, he's a great athlete. He can avoid time. He can avoid and you know, create time with his legs. He's always looking to make throws down the field when he's scrambling. He's not looking to run right away, which is a good. You'd rather have him be, you know, looking to throw rather than pass, that rather than run first when transitioning to the NFL. But what stands out for Caleb is that he's got a very natural feel in the pocket. He knows where to move within the pocket, where the open space is, when he's got time, when he doesn't have time. You know, can he force things a little bit sometimes? Can he go rogue, you know, a couple times here and there a game, a little bit too much? Yes. But to me, like, when you see him dialed in from a processing standpoint, like, it's beautiful to watch. He's got a quick release. He runs the RPO game beautifully. He gets the ball out quick in the quick game. You know, he's got, like I said, he's got that quick release, very snappy, anticipates routes very well when he's playing on time and structure, can get to, you know, his third, fourth read on the other side of the field when it calls for it, processes his defenses pretty well when that's going on. Like, to me, it's just a matter of, like, he had to play a ton of hero ball last year because USC as a team was just dreadful around him. And there, again, are there concerns about him taking too many sacks and fumbling too much and playing too much hero ball? Yes, he's going to have to clean some stuff up. But to me, like, it's very rare to get a quarterback prospect with this level of talent and tools to work with here. And, you know, we don't have to talk about the Bears, you know, decision because we talked about it enough. But all I'll say is, like, if it's me, like, this is not a decision that has to be made. Like, this is just like, Caleb Williams is a very rare talent. And if you have the number one pick, we're taking him.
Yeah, and, you know, I totally agree with you. I think the decision's been made, but the Bears just have to hammer out one or two smaller things before kind of everything becomes official. So we've got about, you know, 5 to 6 weeks here, more like about 6.5 to 7 weeks until the NFL draft. So it's going to be very interesting to see how the rest of, you know, free agency plays out, what the Bears do with Justin Fields, and then kind of what's going to happen with the decision at first and ninth overall.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see what the Bears do here. You know, I think this, like you said, the decision to me has been made. Are they ironing some things out? Yes, probably. That, like, they need to get the medicals from Caleb Williams. They're going to meet with him one more time after his pro day. They're going to try to get him in for a private workout. All that stuff to me is just, you know, things they have to do before they make the decision to ultimately draft him number one overall. And it's going to be exciting. Like, you know, it sucks that, like, this offseason has been as just chaotic as it has been on Bears Twitter, because I think in many other years or any other situations, Bears fans would be, you know, on the same page of being excited for a guy like Caleb Williams. But because of all the things going on with Fields and, you know, a lot of the loyalty that a lot of Bears fans feel they have for him as a player and as a person, you know, that has, it's just, it's made things so toxic as a Bears fan having to deal with this stuff every day. So I'm just ready for it to be over with that. I think, you know, it's a pretty straight up decision, or, you know, it's a pretty obvious decision to make here. We'll see if Ryan Poles, you know, what the timeline looks at like for that. But at the end of the day here, you know, there are a lot of talented quarterbacks in this year's class. You know, there, we had plans to cover some other guys here, but, like, we were already running low on time because it's just hard not to go on off on tangents about these guys. But with that said, it's going to wrap it up for us here today. Just the start for us here as we get through draft season and start these positional breakdowns here. I'm going to have more as we get, you know, go along through the process here. But as we're moving on here, make sure to give us a follow on social media. You can follow us on Twitter at Picks for Polls. There you can follow the Bear Report on Twitter at Bear Report. Make sure to like, rate, subscribe, and review our podcast on wherever you get your podcasts. You say, where can our listeners find you on social media and find your work?
Yes, you can follow me on social media at Usaid Kosho. You can check out my work on the Bear Report website.
Absolutely. You can find me on Twitter at AJFreeman25. On Twitter. And then as for my work, you can find me on the Bear Report as well. Got some stuff going on there for free agency. If you want to get my grades for every free agent signing that the Bears have made, make sure to check that out on the Bear Report. I'll be doing a running article for that. I already got my grades up for DeAndre Swift, for Kevin Byard up there. I should have ones for Gerald Everett and Jonathan Owens up there pretty shortly as well. But, you know, if you're interested in that, make sure to check that out. But until next time, Bears fans, we should be having a lot more for free agency and a lot more for the draft coming up. But until next time, have yourself a great weekend and bear down.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.